It's been both good and bad. I mean, it's allowing us to do stuff in a different way that we never did before, which is exciting. But it was definitely a revenue hit, like I think it is for everybody who owns a physical space. We own Founder Spaces.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest might be the first person that's come on twice to the podcast, which is Captain Hoff, Stephen Hoffman from Founder Space and the author of Make Elephants Fly. Thanks, Steve, for joining me again.
I'm happy to be back.
And we are living in interesting times.
Yes, which is a curse, by the way, in China.
I reference it actually in my new book. So I was like, wait, I just referenced that, but yeah.
Yes, we would much prefer to be living in boring times.
A little bit, right? So I think we were talking before we started. One thing is that I know you do a lot of work in China, and I do as well, but you probably more than I do. Just for people that are watching, like, I think we had a preview of this like probably 2 or 3 months before it hit here, right?
Yes, early in the year. So starting in January and February, we started to see, we have offices across China, partners across China. They all had to shut down. So we're now going through this twice, which is twice as painful.
Yeah, right. You chew up probably 6 months of the year.
It is. It's taken the whole year. Like it's a struggle. I mean, and we're spending a huge amount of time coordinating. We've moved a lot of stuff online. It's been a total shift in our business. And it's been both good and bad. I mean, it's allowing us to do stuff in a different way that we never did before, which is exciting. But it was definitely a revenue hit, like I think it is for everybody who owns a physical space. We own Founder Spaces.
True. Yeah. So for people that don't know, Founder Space is not just a co-working facility, but you also have other programs, right?
Right. So we have incubator programs, startup accelerator programs, corporate programs. We work with a lot of big corporations, advising them on innovation, all that stuff.
So in China, I think, you know, there's a lot of obviously misinformation and conspiracy theories out there, but what did you see early on that might be a preview to what's going to happen here, hopefully?
Well, things are better there. Like China, people are back at work. They've been back for a while. And, you know, everything is opening back up. They haven't really started to do big events yet, so they've been holding off on those. But, day-to-day office work, people are going to work. They seem to have it under control. You never know all the information. I had a friend who literally just flew back to China this week.
Okay.
And she was describing to me, she's Chinese, but she couldn't fly directly from the US, so she had to go to Amsterdam, which is sort of the long way around, and then land in Guangzhou, that's where she's from. And they basically locked her up. So like she doesn't have any symptoms for the disease, but just because she was abroad, she is now quarantined in a hotel. She isn't allowed to see her family or anybody for 2 weeks. Every day they come and take her temperature. People come dressed in masks and suits.
Oh my gosh.
You know, to interact with. It's like she's become the viral vector. She isn't even sick. Like she has no symptoms. But every day they come in masks and stuff and they take her temperature. The people who drop off her food at the hotel, the hotel staff, they literally leave the food at the door, knock, and run. And like, she sees him running down the hall, like terrified to have a face-to-face encounter with her. So put it this way, contrast that with the U.S. I don't, you know, we're much, much more relaxed about this situation than they are in China.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously it rubs people the wrong way when you're in a country built on freedoms. At least the idea of freedoms. And the fear is that, you know, they'll just keep encroaching on your freedoms and it'll never go back.
Right. And in China, you know, they just accept this, right? And it's a sort of a communal society. It's not an individualistic society. Everybody does what everybody says. They're used to top down, you know, whatever they say on the top, we're gonna have to do anyway. So there's no use arguing with it. You know, there's some advantages, some disadvantages, but definitely in containing something like a virus, like having that degree of control. I mean, in other respects, it really impinges on your freedom, but they can use that to effectively contain this virus. And I think that's what they've done.
Yeah. And I think here, we've been probably under for what, 30 days, it sounds, I think, is that right? Today's the...
I'm losing track, honestly.
I think it's around 30 days. I think it was on the 12th of March, actually, that a lot of stuff started shutting down, like kind of 12th to 17th. So we're just a little over 30. And are you guys going till May 15th in San Francisco, or are you...
I've lost track, you know, because they keep, you know, the dates are all uncertain. Nobody knows. So I've stopped really paying attention to it.
And like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. They'll let me know when I can do it. And I'm just like doing what I can do now in my house. And, you know, honestly, I've never been busier. Like, I am super busy.
Oh, boy.
You know, I transformed. This is what you're looking at. The picture behind me is an actual founder space, but that's not where I am. I'm just superimposed on top of that. Where I am now is in my house, but I've transformed my house into a production studio. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah. So I'm shooting really high quality video. You know, I'm finishing up my next book that I plan to launch. I'm coordinating all over the world, our different founder spaces and different partners. I'm doing online events. I'm doing podcasts.
Awesome.
And video blogs. So I find myself, even in this crazy time, I'm not bored. Like, right. I can't even, there literally aren't enough hours in the day for me to get everything done. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so busy. Like, I want to finish that video. I don't have time.
So I find myself getting burned out during the day. Like, I find that I wake up and I immediately start working, and I'm trying to create a new routine, but I think that's the bigger risk for me. Like, I've been busy like you have. So I don't
know. Well, I'll tell you what I do. I go out every day to exercise. I make sure I get out of my house. Like, I'm out. Like, there's some nice parks. You know, I'm in San Francisco. They have Land's End, Golden Gate Park. I go out there. I try to avoid all the joggers that are always coming at me, like little, like missiles, like viral vectors. Like, it's an obstacle course. But, you know, assuming I can avoid them, I feel great about being outside.
That's good. Yeah, I guess that is true. Like, you can go out quite a bit. So that is a positive.
Yeah, you can if you want to. I mean, literally, you can go hiking, you can get in your car. We're not restricted here. We can do a lot.
True.
A lot of people just don't, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I can't do it.
Like, you can't. So one of the things that we were talking about off camera was how those businesses that are kind of traditional in both their structure, but also their model, are probably being hurt a lot worse than businesses that might be more digital. Is that a good way to...
That's absolutely right. But it really depends on the business. But yeah, if you are tied to anything with a physical location, you're going to take a much bigger hit in general. Now, we look at companies. There are companies that are digital, but their business is related to, you know, stores and restaurants like Yelp. They had to lay off 1,000 people because... Yeah. You know, they're digital, but all their customers are physical. And so, you know, they're not going to pay for advertising when they're closed. You know, their revenue goes. So we see a lot of the food tech companies, things like that, they're suffering. But the ones that are purely digital, the more digital they are, the more automated they are, the less impacted they are.
So one of the things I've been writing in my new book is about making sure that, number one, you are properly aligned. Like, you're not creating old business models. And I think you write a lot about innovation. And how do you see people creating something new? And are people thinking that way right now to insulate themselves in the future?
I do. I see it a lot. Yeah. In my book, Make Elephants Fly, I go into detail on like the whole process of innovation. What I see now is, you know, people are being forced to innovate when they normally, you know, things were fine. People tend to just go with the flow. I'm making money. But now that everything's disrupted, they have the time. I actually tell them it's a great time to rethink your business. It's a great time, even if you're going to keep the same business, to plan for the future. How can you be more efficient? How can you add more value to your customers? What can you do to take your business up a notch? You have time to think about it. You're not like every day in the restaurant or every day, you know, running whatever you're running, you know, doing events. You can totally reimagine, because those are going to come back. There is a danger, though.
You think China, physical businesses will come back?
No, here's the danger. Not that physical businesses won't come back. You know, in general, people like to be out. Like, you know, We like to go out. We will go out to eat again. And these restaurants will open up. Some of the physical stores that weren't really profitable in the first place, you know, they're the retailers. they may not open up again.
Yeah.
But any business that was, you know, doing well before, will be doing well again if they survive, if they can pull through this tough time.
I mean, but I think the risk there is that if it feels like we're being prepped for a change in density, which is, you know, we're still going to have social distancing. So for restaurant, the ability to make money a lot of times is how many people can be closer together.
Yeah. You know, a lot of them are doing takeout and things right. like that. But honestly, even the density will go back to normal. I mean, this virus, it won't last forever. Like, it's going to go away. Like, you know, it won't go away tomorrow. And, yeah. you know, it's the repercussions are going to be with us for some time. But the physical distancing issue, as soon as that virus tails off and it's not really here, it we're going to forget about it. And things are going to go back. There is a danger, though. Like in China and in the US, I've seen a lot of offline businesses rush to go online. Like they want to take what they do events, especially event companies, and they want to move them all online right. and other types of businesses. Honestly, online is a totally, you know this more than anybody because you're an expert in it. Online is a totally different world than offline. Like what people do online, how they do it, how the experiences they want, the value they get out of it are completely different. You can't just transpose something offline to online and expect it to work. And generate revenue. Like if you do an online event, you might be able to charge $600, $1,000 per ticket if it's a high-end event. Nobody's going to pay for that online. Like you know, you're just not going to get that money. That business model. I mean, maybe you could do the event, but the business model fundamentally won't translate to online because people Very don't true. Value it in the same way as an offline event. So what I tell people is, you also have to think, many of the things that you're doing now, some of them they're doing just because of, you know, COVID-19, the whole virus. They're like making masks or respirators or things to deal with the situation, which is admirable. But those aren't long-term business models. Like I get pitched every day for startups doing, you know, new type of mask, new
oh,
type
really?
Of
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah. They feel like that's not going to be long-term. I mean, I don't think it will be.
It won't be. But let's face it, like we're going to be drowning in masks soon. Once you own enough respirators, they're not going to know where to store them for right. the next event.
That's what like, which is like, okay, you're pounding out all these ventilators. And then if this goes away, what happens to the ventilators?
Yeah. Yeah. They're just going to trash them at some point because they won't want to pay to store them. So those aren't long-term business models. If you're sending me your business plan based on that, you know, it's just it's a short-term thing. Yeah. You need to think about when this goes away, will your business still be viable? If it won't be viable, don't invest the time. Also, if it takes you a long time to develop that product, it's not going to be worth it. It's never going to pay off because by the time you get it done, it's going to be almost over and you won't recoup your investment. So people have to they can't just react. You have to be strategic about what you do in this time, where you put your resources. I think the best thing you can do is if you have a strong offline business before, it's going to come back. You need to weather the storm and you need to use your moment in your employees' time to reimagine your business. Every business can be improved. Every business, you know, no business can't be made better. I don't care who you are. You True. Can do a better yeah. job.
And I think yeah. there's a lot of like lack of motivation when there's no stressor, right? So now it's like people are motivated to insulate themselves. Whereas before it was like, yeah, it's a good idea to go digital or to change the way I'm doing business. But there was no like, no, you got to do this or not. You're not going to survive.
Right. So yeah. there's this big impetus to do this. But just going digital isn't enough. It's like, even in your traditional business, can you do something different? Right. Take this time to look at all your competitors, everything they did before. Right. How can you come back into the marketplace much stronger, in a much better position? You actually have time to start getting some of this done and with your team, even though your team isn't officially at the office or at the restaurant. If you're paying them, they're still your team. You should get them involved. You should start an innovation project. Like, you know, how can we make our kitchen more efficient? Can we come up with new dishes, you know, for our restaurant? How can we market this in a new way once we reopen? What are all the things we can do that we never did because every day was just such a rush to keep up with, you know, the flow?
So I feel like, you know, not to focus just on restaurants, but in general, if someone's business model's kind of been interrupted by this, What are a couple of points for how they can get to the point where they're innovating in a way that actually is useful?
Yeah. So the best thing you can always do is a couple things. Look at what your competitors are doing, of course, as a baseline. That's just the beginning. The next thing you need to do is really start to examine a couple things. One, what do your customers want? When they come to you, why are they coming to you? And are they getting what they really want? Like, go through and read the reviews, the online reviews of your business, and start to analyze them deeply. Like, in, you know, that feedback that a lot of us ignore because we're just too busy. People are giving us, they're actually giving us valuable feedback. We don't even have time to implement the changes. So that we just don't even read it. Go back and read it. It's so simple. It's just there waiting for you. Start to think about the processes you use. You know, what tools do you use? Can you upgrade those? Can you create a better user experience? What would it take to create that experience? Can you start developing that now while you have this downtime? All of these. So for me, like personally, like you, I told you I'm so busy, but it wasn't an accident. I literally said, there's a list of things I wanted to get done that I was too busy because, like, last year I was traveling like 70% of the time to ever get this stuff done. And I had this list and I go, now's the time. I'm going to dive into that list. You should always be keeping a list of what you want to do in the future. Then if there's ever time like this, you can just, that list is waiting for you.
Yeah, for me. So I was just about to launch the Founders Pack live events.
There you go.
On March 18th was supposed to be the first one, and that was like gone. So to your point, you know, one of the things that was further down the line for me was the Startup and Grow course for Founders Pack, which I've created.
Yeah.
And I've been writing the book, Form Your Own Pack, which kind of is like, here's the method, you know, the philosophy. So I know, what's the new book that you're working on, by the way?
So, you know, Hachette, the publisher, published Make Elephants Fly. So that's out there in all the bookstores. Surviving a Startup is my new book. I just finished that. It got picked up by HarperCollins. It's great. And it's not on the store shelves yet. So it will be coming out. We haven't set an exact deadline. And then, of course, I've been using this time to write my next book. So my first book is all about the elephant, your big idea, how you get it off the ground, how you make it fly. The second book is like everything an entrepreneur needs to know to survive. So all the basics. And then my new book that I'm writing now is about technology. All the new technologies coming into play right now and how they're going to impact us in the future.
So I think part of what, you know, I try to, it's hard maybe to get people to think this way, but obviously technology is very transformational, especially if you look at the last 10 years. So if you were to go back 10 years and go, well, I could have foreseen that the iPhone was going to create the app market, it was going to revolutionize music, and it was going to be a platform. And then same thing with Android, right?
Right.
Because really, like, that stuff came out like 2007 to 2010, and then it hit an inflection point where it was, you know, start growing exponentially. So what do you see as the next 10 years? Like, what's going to grow in the same way? Like, how do you predict the future?
You know, predicting the future is, you know, nobody can exactly predict the future, but you can identify underlying forces and technologies that are definitely going to come into play. And I will tell you, there's so many things, like there'll be more opportunities for entrepreneurs in the next 10 years than there were in the last. And these will be massively transformational for our industries, for society, for government, for everything. These are going to have a huge impact. So, you know, all of us know already AI is playing a major role, right? So AI is out there. It's being used in a million different ways across almost every industry. It is probably, at this time, the most powerful transformational technology there is. You know, then there's others that I'm super excited about, like gene editing, CRISPR gene editing software. They're coming out with new gene therapies for everything from life extension, you know, to curing cancer, to you name it. They're working on it. Like, if you can imagine it, there's some scientist out there in his or her lab concocting it. There's space travel. We've seen, you know, with Elon Musk, you know, Jeff Bezos, these guys are building a whole ecosystem now in space. you don't have to be a rocket ship company to make money in space. You don't have to, you know, build the next heavy Falcon. You can literally build software or some small piece of this much larger industry and have a very viable and potentially even very big business. So that's a big opportunity for entrepreneurs. Biotech is still going strong in all of its forms, right? There's just so much happening in biotech. We financial tech, you know, we've seen a lot of changes with the blockchain, with banks, with insurance companies, with, you know, all these, you know, real estate and property technology, all, you know, literally every business on the planet is being transformed by technology. And new technologies are on the way. There's, you know, BCI, brain computer interfaces are coming.
Stuff. I've been telling people about, like, I think there's like a war between the gene editors and the BTI type guy.
Right? Yeah, should we just make ourselves smarter through like enhancing our genes? Or should we plug in with Elon Musk?
Well, it's crazy because I think that there's like, well, there's probably a few streams there, but for people that don't know, brain computer interfaces could potentially enhance your cognitive ability, right?
Yeah.
In a bunch of ways.
Yeah, I actually give talks about this. They're on my site, some free videos.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Where one of my TED Talks is all about brain-computer interfaces. So, like, basically, what does it mean to connect your brain to the internet? And do we really want to do it? Like, you know, I know Mark Zuckerberg, he's working on this right now, would love us to do it. But do we trust Facebook with, you know, do we trust them with our data? No. Do we trust them with the data in our brains? I hope not. And so these are the really, I'm going to be giving a lecture, in fact, next week on data ethics. Like, what are the ethics of data, especially in a world where we have brain-computer interfaces, where we have surveillance cameras everywhere? These surveillance cameras have AI. They can actually predict what you're going to do, like in a store, whether you're going to buy a product, whether you're going to shoplift, you know, what amount you're going to spend just by looking at you. And they're also listening to you. So the world is becoming a very interesting place. These technologies are extremely powerful, and in the wrong hands, they could be extremely detrimental, even dangerous.
Yeah, so there's got to be, I don't know if legislation itself is enough. Like, I feel like there needs to be more leadership around this. And I mean, politics to me are not, it's like an old idea that can't handle this. That's what I feel like. I don't know what you think about, but
Most of the politicians don't even understand this.
No, that's exactly.
They're like clueless. So it's very hard for them to write legislation that would control it. Yet at a certain point, we have to figure out, you know, what they need to do, what you need to do in society is find a way to incentivize people to innovate to protect people's privacy. You can't do it by forcing them, right? You need to create an environment where if I innovate, if I protect people's privacy, I have something to gain.
Well, that goes to my next, I thought I was going to ask you about. So it's really interesting you said that. So I believe that there's going to be a boom in privacy technology, really, is what it boils down to, right? Like your two identities, your second life, so to speak. Like I think that's a thing still, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what you think.
It's barely a thing, but yes, Second Life has been around forever.
Adventure in this area, right?
It was more virtual reality.
Yeah, the virtual reality stuff.
Yeah, I used to be in that space. Right. I know that space intimately. You know, we met back when.
Yeah, that's right. I just remember that. So what do you think, though, about it going to the next level, which is I should be able to create an avatar where the avatar trusts and verifies who I am. So it doesn't matter. You can interface with my avatar. I shouldn't have to put all my information out there for you.
Yes. So a virtual identity, an avatar, these things, they will be coming. They're already here in some form, right? Your Facebook identity, right? Is it really you, or is it who you want the world to see? Is it your avatar? You know, for most of us,
it's
honestly,
too much you.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much, but it's never really you, right? Because people put on Facebook what they want people to think of them, not necessarily who they are. I mean, very few people are totally honest on Facebook. They're selecting.
They have modeled people's behavior in a pretty accurate way, though, don't you think?
Oh, totally. Look, they can tell what people will do, right? Facebook can tell what you'll do because you do it, right? They know what videos you'll watch because you watch those videos. But that's real data. All I was saying is like your profile, right? What you put in your profile, the picture you put up there, it's the best picture of you or some picture, right, that you want people to see. What you write in your profile isn't exactly who you are. When you select your favorite movies, you're picking the movies, not just that you like, but that you think will make other people like you.
Maybe, right? I feel like... we'll all have our, potentially what would be great is if we all had our own Jarvis and that was your envoy to the world, right? Where it's like, this is your avatar butler that's going out to the world and it's presenting what you want on your behalf, but it's concealing the real you. It's like a buffer between you and the crazy theft of identities and all that other stuff.
That's an interesting idea, right? So a virtual identity that can shield you from some of the dangers.
Exactly.
Is it possible? What form would it take? You know, like you said on Facebook, your actions speak more loudly than your own words, right? Because you can doctor your own words, your profile, your picture. But when you actually act upon something, when they prompt you to actually do something, that's when they see who you are. That's a very hard thing to cover up. Because if your avatar, if you have this virtual assistant, this avatar that with the AI, let's say, that goes out there and selects what products you should be buying, what food you should eat, it is basing those preferences on you. So they're still learning about you.
For sure. I guess they don't know who you are though.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're supposed to do now. You know, most of this data is anonymized, right? So even when Facebook sells your data, they're quote unquote selling anonymized data. We don't know, but Google too, they claim it's all anonymized. So they claim they're doing this in a way. The question is, we don't have a choice to opt out. We don't have a choice whom they sell it to.
If it's anonymous, why do you need my name, my birthday, and all that stuff? Like, I don't believe it is. It might be anonymous when they sell it.
Yes.
But there's a source of truth there where they got all that data. And you can tell by the data breaches that that's reality.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Versus, well, especially when, it's your credit card and social security number.
Oh, yeah.
It's
you. I mean, you know as well as I do, there have been like 500 million, 200 million hacks. You get these crazy emails that say, well, I know this password and I know the bad things you're doing. It's not really the bad things. It's the fact they know your password that you think it's real. It's like a con, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like I would love, and I believe this has to happen, which is, yeah, you understand my intent, but you don't know it's me that has that intent. You don't have to know it's me. You should talk to my butler. And you don't have to know that butler belongs to me.
that would be great. And if they could really make it secure, that would be fantastic. Because right now, when you browse the web, even if they collect anonymized data, algorithms now are so smart that they can look through that data and work backwards. And a lot of times they can figure out who you are.
Yes.
Even though it's been anonymized, it's this person, they're living in this city, they have these patterns of behaviors. Yep. Wow, it only matches to a small subset of people. It's probably Michael.
Maybe, right? What do you, just to close off the topic of technology and trends, are you excited about 3D printing and where it's going?
I am. 3D printing had a lot of hype in the early days, like most new technologies.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it's way overblown. Everybody's like, oh my God, we're all going to be 3D printing. Well, it turned out to be, the first wave turned out to be mostly hobbyists, early adopters experimenting. Yep. Now we're getting to the point where 3D printers are powerful enough. I mean, we can do amazing, you keep reading, they built this bridge, they built this home with a 3D printer. You're like, how they built this plane? Do I want to get in that plane?
Totally.
they're building parts for rocket ships now and space stations. I'm excited about 3D printing. I'm excited about bringing manufacturing closer to the customer, closer to the point of sale. On demand manufacturing at the location. Like, you walk into a store in a mall, and literally they can print out a custom whatever you want for you right there. Now, there's a lot of products that are too complex still for this, electronic products and stuff, but we're getting there.
Probably,
with base, like shoes and stuff, they're getting pretty close to, you could walk in and get a totally custom fit shoe with whatever style you want in the store for you and walk out with it.
That would impact so many things like logistics and shipping and storage. Yeah. After this?
The whole idea right now, with the COVID-19 virus and all the problems, they've disrupted supply chains because already so much of supply chain management, the software and the AI, has been focused around not having to any inventory, excess inventory. Like, you literally, as a factory, inventory is a cost. It's lowering your profits. So you just want to squeeze it to the bare minimum. What we found is, like, when there's a disruption to the supply chain, all of a sudden everything gets screwed up because there is no inventory to pull from. You know, these masks or whatever people need right now, they're not just sitting in a warehouse somewhere. So we will see even more of that. That's a natural consequence of this automation process that we've been going on for a long time, is that we will see inventories and everything is moving closer and closer to true on demand. Like, you press a button and it appears for you.
So I guess, again, like, do we think this is the nail in the coffin of retail?
You know, I don't, because there's two types of retail. There's retail where you have, it's still retail, is much huger than online. We think of Amazon as, like, controlling the whole market.
It's like 5 or 10 or 20% or something, or what is it?
Yeah, it's small. Like, the whole online market, I forget the exact number, but it's somewhere around like 20% or something of the offline market. So it's still a big market. People still like the shop, but is retail's trend shrinking? Is the amount shrinking? It is on that trend, but people will always shop as entertainment. So there's one type of shopping where it's utility shopping. I just need to get what I need to get. But there's another type of shopping when people go to the mall and they're looking around. People want to get out. They want to do something.
Yeah.
And if stores can make money, they will make money. And there's this experiential nature to shopping. You know, the Apple store proved it, right? They didn't need those stores. Like, people didn't have, but people want to go and they touch and they feel. They might not even buy in the store, but the store represents the company, represents the experience of Apple. And a lot of people do like to buy in the store. They just like it. And those stores are highly profitable. So there will always be room for retail. Will it change? Yeah, it's moving more in that direction. Will it ever totally go away? Well, even now, Costco's raking in the money. You know, even during COVID-19, those guys are raking in the money. They're not going away.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting. Just probably less. I guess we'll see how it impacts tiers as they go down.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to be conscious of your time because I know we could keep talking forever.
Forever.
What are you working on that's exciting that you want people to know about? And maybe you can even touch on, like, how you think this is going to affect